That Great American Eclipse, this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond, and with more of our special coverage of the cosmic event that will happen on Monday, August 21st, rain or shine. We'll go to Southern Illinois University Carbondale to hear about that school's exciting and very public plans. How many worlds have we discovered around the Milky Way? Bruce Betts will share the mind-blowing total on What's Up. And now, something we've all been looking forward to for weeks. Senior editor Emily Lakdawalla has returned. Emily, it has been far too long. Welcome back!
Thank you, Matt.
And you are back with a bang. A big bang. I mean, first, a very comprehensive update about the Curiosity rover. But what we're going to talk about for the next two or three minutes is this little event related to the planet Saturn. Tell us about, I don't know, was it a celebration?
It was a celebration, I guess. It was an event to mark a very important and significant event in the lifetime of the Cassini project, which was the very first time that Cassini dived between Saturn's rings and the planet. It had all the trappings of a usual kind of JPL event where people were waiting for the signal from the spacecraft. In actuality, there really wasn't any doubt that the spacecraft was going to survive this passage. These people understand their spacecraft very well. They've learned a lot about Saturn. They knew how the spacecraft was going to perform. But it still seemed really important for everybody to watch because it was the first step on the rest of Cassini's mission, a mission that's inevitably going to end in September.
And there was a very personal side to all of this, even some songs composed for the occasion.
That's right. There's a group called the Cassini Virtual Singers that has been singing at these kinds of events. Honest to God choral group, soprano, alto, tenor, baritone. They were singing in four-part harmony, all kinds of songs about silly in-jokes among the engineers and operations managers who run a spacecraft mission. It was very nerdy and very fun.
How about the science, at least at this early stage?
Well, when you first get into a new orbit, the first science that comes back is in the form of images. And some of the first images that they got back from this dive, they were all focused at the planet this time, not at the rings. The spacecraft had its cameras pointed at the planet. But over time, these next few months of data are going to build up a really rich understanding of this innermost zone of Saturn's rings. And also, for the first time, we'll finally be able to separate the mass of Saturn's rings from the mass of the planet. We actually don't know how much Saturn's rings weigh. And that's really important information to try to understand how old the rings are. And guess what? After all this Cassini mission, we still don't know how old the rings are.
And not only that, what about how long a day is on Saturn? Are we going to learn about that?
That's funny. That's one of those things that we thought we knew after the Voyager mission, and then Cassini showed up and found out that the day length was different. A planet like Saturn cannot change its day length that fast. So turns out we were wrong from Voyager, and hopefully maybe being this close to Saturn, this deep inside its magnetosphere, will help scientists finally get a read on exactly how fast the interior of the planet is spinning.
Emily, it is wonderful to have you back from sabbatical, both here on the radio show and at planetary.org, where everybody can read that Curiosity piece and this terrific piece about your experience with Cassini and that terrific team that is now counting down the last days of the mission.
It's a pleasure to be back, Matt.
That's Emily Lakdawalla, back with us from sabbatical. She is the senior editor for the Planetary Society, and we'll be hearing much more from her in the weeks to come. I'd only been in Southern Illinois once before. It was many years ago, and I didn't have nearly as good a reason for being there as I did a couple of weeks ago, or will again in August. Southern Illinois University Carbondale is where I'll be for the Great American Eclipse on August 21st. Actually, I'll be there several days before to join the grand celebration of this astronomical wonder that will pass diagonally across the United States from its northwest to its southeast. SIU Carbondale is right in the middle of that path. It's also in the middle of preparing to share it with everyone who comes to the beautiful campus. You can learn about the big plans at eclipse.siu.edu. That's also where you can get your tickets for the climactic gathering in Saluki Stadium. And you will need tickets, at least for the stadium show, but there will be so much more happening, as I learned at a reception not far from the university.
I'm Bob Baer. I work at SAU Carbondale. I am the Eclipse Committee co-chair for the Eclipse 2017 coming up. Of course, Carbondale is going to be seeing too, so we talk about in terms of Eclipse 2017 and 2024.
Other than being incredibly fortunate at the location of the campus, why has the university embraced this to the degree it has? It's really pretty amazing.
It is. So at SIU, we look at it as a large community outreach opportunity. But this is the biggest opportunity that we have, this Eclipse coming up, to reach out to such a large group of people. It occurs on the first day of school for us, so all the students returning back to campus are going to see an eclipse. We often joke, who else gives their students a total solar eclipse on the first day of class? There's a few other universities in the path, but we're very proud of that. Not only they can see this, but they can get engaged with us and actually, you know, volunteer and help us out with activities the day of.
Give me just a thumbnail description of some of the major events that are going to be going on over really like 4 days.
Right. We start Friday night, actually, and we're doing a big carnival for the students. We have an eclipse preview event. Starting on Saturday, we're doing Eclipse Comic Con. So that goes Saturday and Sunday. That's, you know, a pop culture event for the students.
And this is a real Comic Con.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're working with a group out of Cape Girardeau, Missouri. They're helping us to plan it out. This is the first Comic Con event we've ever done on the campus, and it's being done through SPC, the Student Programming Council. So they're working out the details of that right now. I'm really looking forward to it. I've heard already that it does sound like we have some stormtroopers who will be involved with this Comic Con.
Star Wars stormtroopers, yeah. Got it.
Yes.
Just to be clear.
Exactly. Some cosplay. And then on Sunday, we're doing an Eclipse Expo. Everyone identifies with the eclipse. A lot of people, as you know, identify with astronomy in general. There's often no language barriers when you're looking at objects through a telescope. And this one, the eclipse, you don't even need a telescope to see this. So this is a pretty spectacular opportunity. The big viewing event on campus on Monday is at the stadium. And I always tell people, you know, you can see the eclipse from anywhere. Here in Southern Illinois, you can step outside your back door and see the eclipse. In the stadium, we're doing this event for first-time viewers who have never seen an eclipse. So they can come in, they can get the eclipse explained to them. There's programming going on called edutainment.
Yeah.
So it's educational and entertaining. But it's really for the first-time eclipse viewer or someone like me. I've seen one total so far, but I'm like you. I really want to see this with the crowd. I am really excited to see the crowd's reaction for this eclipse.
And it's not like you're going to turn somebody away if they've happened to have seen one before.
Oh, no, not at all. We'd love for those people to be here because they're kind of going to be part of the show. If you're coming in and you've seen an eclipse before and you're bringing equipment into the stadium and you want to set it up, we're going to be talking to you that day. We're going to be asking you, what's your experience? Let us know, and it will be part of the show that day, actually. And along those lines, one of the major events with this eclipse are the broadcasts going out. So your event that's going to be done on campus.
That's our Planetary Radio Live on Sunday.
Right. The eclipse panel discussion on Sunday, that's a major event for our campus. And then the day of the eclipse, NASA EDGE is broadcasting from campus. WSIU is going to be rebroadcasting that. We're really excited for the whole world to see what the campus is like and see the eclipse from our perspective on campus.
You're an astronomer. Where was that prior total solar eclipse that you saw?
So I saw one in Tanjung Pandan, Indonesia.
You were working pretty hard. What was your personal reaction, your emotional reaction to it?
That's a really good question. So it started for us at about 4:30 a.m. We can hear the call to prayer is kind of our wake-up call right outside the hotel. And it's still dark, and we hike back to our observation site about a half a mile from the hotel. Before the sun's coming up, we're setting up the telescope. And we can see Venus, As soon as the sun came up, the clouds started parting for us. The focus of what we were doing was focusing the telescope at that time. That was the most challenging part of our task, was focusing and getting the tracking right. There was just so much anticipation as we got towards totality, and you can see these beautiful partial eclipse images on the ground. You can actually just hold out your hand and see the images being projected. Moments before totality, we had a more experienced amateur astronomer with us who called out totality, and I pulled the telescope filter and I bumped the telescope. The telescope moves. Luckily, we got it back on track. We got it back on target right away and made sure the data was being collected, verified that, and then I look up at it and I think it's a good thing I got this telescope running before I looked at totality, because I didn't want to look away at that point. It's just amazing. We saw prominence. The corona was big. In Indonesia, people told me it was larger than other eclipses, but naked eye, it looked about twice the diameter of the moon. Then there was this little prominence. For us, it was about at 8 o'clock, and it's bright red. So the corona is just this beautiful, pure white. And you're seeing a prominence naked eye, which I have never seen before. The other part of it is seeing Venus and Mercury close to the sun. You know, we never see anything like that. I'm just still astounded by it as I talk about it now, just how spectacular it was to see that. So it was just this huge relief that we got the data. It was wonderful.
Back to the campus. What's your advice to people who are intrigued and are within reach of Southern Illinois University?
If they live just outside of the path of totality, they need to make sure they get inside the path of totality. That's something we talk about a lot. The people who say, well, I'm at 95%, that's good enough. No, you need to travel. You need to make that trip. If you're in Illinois, traveling to Southern Illinois is a wonderful option for you, or if you're close to that. What we have going on campus, the major events going on starting Friday through Monday, I don't know of anywhere in the country that's doing the variety and the quality of scientific and cultural events that we have going on at SIU Carbondale. So I'd recommend make plans early. Come down early. We open the doors to the stadium at 9. Again, if you think you're just going to show up the day of, an hour before totality, and everything's going to be okay, no, you need to reevaluate that plan. Come down the day before. If you're within driving distance and you're coming down the day of, come down very early. Plan out your trip. Plan this out as if it's a trip that you really got to get right. Don't just wing it.
And that's probably true for pretty much any place you may want to get to, although I think SIU Carbondale celebration is going to be very special. I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait either. Yeah, it'll be here before we know it. We're around 120 days left to go now.
And counting. Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you, Matt.
Bob Baer, co-chair of the Eclipse Celebration Committee at Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. When we return, we'll hear how one of the world's most famous planetariums will be part of the Great American Eclipse at that university. This is Planetary Radio.
I'm Casey Dreyer, the Planetary Society's Director of Space Policy. In the past 5 years, our members have helped us to achieve every single advocacy priority we've had. But we have a new Congress, we have a new president, and soon, a new NASA administrator. Decisions are being made right now that will impact NASA for a generation. You can learn more about this at planetary.org/advocacy. Thank you.
Hi, Emily Lakdawala here with big news from the Planetary Society. We're rolling out a new membership plan with great benefits and expanded levels of participation. At the Planetary Society, passionate space fans like you join forces to create missions, nurture new science and technology, advocate for space, and educate the world. Details are at planetary.org/membership. I'll see you around the solar system.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm Matt Kaplan. The Great Adler Planetarium sits on an island in Lake Michigan, a short walk from downtown Chicago, Illinois. The planetarium reaches for the stars, and its outreach extends far beyond the lakeshore. Its partnership with SIU Carbondale for the upcoming total solar eclipse is a good example of that work. The woman leading that participation was also in town when I visited Southern Illinois.
My name is Michelle Nichols, and I'm master educator at the Adler Planetarium in Chicago.
We are here this weekend, Michelle, you and I both, as a sort of the pathfinders, I think, for what's going to happen in August, right? Why is Adler going to be coming down this way?
The Adler Planetarium was contacted by SIU maybe about a year or so ago to help out with their eclipse event preparations, mainly because they said, well, we don't have an astronomy department on campus, and we have astronomers on staff, and could we help out with what they had in mind? And as the year has gone on, things have evolved, and so we've got quite a big presence that we're going to be having for the eclipse event. We actually start the week before the event. We have an outreach program that we call Galaxy Ride, so it's going to start Monday, August 14th. Basically, we're going to where people are, so restaurants, bars, schools, libraries, various other places. I'm going to do free outreach events, basically get people excited about the eclipse, get them looking up at the sky, and then on the Monday of the eclipse, we'll have a tent at the stadium with activities going on all throughout the day. And then you and I will be hosting the eclipse stadium show inside Saluki Stadium at Southern Illinois campus.
And there are a number of activities that are going to be taking place. It's like a five-hour show in the stadium. What are some of the things that you're hoping to demonstrate?
Our preparation has been trying to figure out how to get somewhere between 10 to 15,000 people engaged with a stadium show that's going on the field. My goal is to try to figure out ways that people can participate with me. So things like making a pinhole projector by putting your hands together, looking around for experiences that are going on around you, like listening to the sounds of what people are saying, what they're doing, what they're feeling, what they're experiencing at that moment, figuring out ways we can all be a part of this together so that it's not just you, me, and various other people just on the field. We want to draw all those people into the show itself.
How does something like this fit into the mission of Adler Planetarium?
We have a theme that we've been working with the last few years. We call it Here, There, Everywhere. So we have really great things that happen at the Adler Planetarium. That's here. Or, well, it's not here.
5.5 hours north, right?
Yeah, 5.5 hours north of where we are right now. There means we have ways of getting out into the community. So that could be the local Chicago community. That could be the suburbs. That could be down here in Southern Illinois. And then everywhere. How do we get them to engage with whatever it is that we're talking about or the program that we have so that they can bring it into their own communities. So leveraging their resources, getting people excited and increasing their own capacity to maybe take what we might give them and use it in whatever way they need to.
This is not your first.
No, this is going to be my second total solar eclipse. I was lucky enough to see one in 1999. Solar eclipses come in approximately 18-year cycles. They happen more often than that. They happen about twice a year. But they come in about 18-year cycles, and the last one in the cycle of the one that's coming up in August was the one in 1999. So we were on a cruise ship in the Black Sea with several hundred other folks on a relatively small cruise ship, cruised around, and we were in the middle of the Black Sea for Eclipse Day, and it was absolutely magical, and I'm hoping we have a similar experience in August.
How did you react personally?
I sobbed. There is no right reaction. There's no wrong reaction. There's no right place to be. There's no wrong place to be. The only right place to be is in the path of totality, and it's clear. That's the right place to be.
And you would agree, therefore, with the other people who've been on this show, that it's a profound experience, obviously.
It's a life-changing experience. It really is. It's something that once you see one, number one, you completely, 100%, viscerally understand why people were terrified of these things. Hundreds of years ago, when we couldn't predict them, all of a sudden the sky goes dark, and it looks like a hole in the sky. And I know what it is. I know it's the moon covering the sun and you see the corona. I know the science, but the emotion and the understanding of it, you feel connected to that alignment that only a certain number of people are going to see. Mm-hmm. And so it's such a unique, amazing astronomy experience, unlike any other in astronomy. We can see planetary conjunctions. We can see lunar eclipses. We can see all sorts of stuff. We can say the last time Mars was this close to Earth was 50,000 years ago or whatever it was, like in 2003. Yeah. But this is something completely different. And so that's why I encourage anyone, if you have the means to go to this path of totality, please go.
Thank you, Michelle. I'll see you in August.
I'm looking forward to it.
Adler Planetarium Master Educator Michelle Nichols. Again, you can dig into the details of Southern Illinois University Carbondale's public celebration of the August 21st Great American Eclipse at eclipse.siu.edu. Got a smartphone? Want to contribute to the science that will be accomplished all along the path of totality on August 21st? If so, the Eclipse Mega Movie Project wants you. I talked to a couple of the project partners in the online version of this week's Planetary Radio episode. You can hear it at planetary.org/radio, among other places. Time to visit once again with Bruce Betts, the Director of Science and Technology for the Planetary Society. And he's going to tell us about the night sky, and we've got some other cool stuff to talk about.
Thank you, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's going to be a busy week. Got to get two shows done this week before I leave for the Humans to Mars conference, which is next week in Washington, D.C.
Are they sending you?
Not yet. My application is in, but I don't know where I am on the list.
Yeah, I don't think it really matters, but okay.
Is that red thing up there?
It is, but it's going away. It's getting tough. Been up for a long time, but it's starting to get really low in the west. Shortly after sunset, you might still be able to pick it up. But you can pick up giant Jupiter looking super bright in the evening sky in the east and the south, traveling across the sky during the night, looking brighter than any of the stars in the sky. Speaking of bright, even brighter Venus is up in the pre-dawn east. In between those two is Saturn rising in the mid to late evening now in the east, dimmer and yellowish. We move on to This Week in Space History. It was 1961 that Alan Shepard became the first American in space with a suborbital flight.
Big deal, and now more people beginning to look at doing suborbital flights like that, but paying a lot of money out of their own pocket to do it.
Yeah, similar concept, though. We move on to Random Space Fact!
I don't know what to make of that. Go ahead.
I don't either. So you know this, Matt, but some of our listeners who've come on later may not realize there are two sets of Lego bricks on Mars, courtesy of the Planetary Society, NASA, and the Lego group. On the landing bases of Spirit and Opportunity, we sent a silica glass DVD, and the holder has three Lego bricks each. They are aluminum, but here's the neat part to me, and I made sure before we sent them off, they will fit a Lego brick. So when astronauts visit that somewhere in the distant future, they will be able to build on top of those Lego bricks that are already on Mars.
I love it. I didn't know you'd actually tested them.
I did. It works. I've got the engineering mock-up and build all sorts of things all day long.
Well, when I go, I'll be sure to do that.
Okay. See, we've resolved so much in this episode. On to the trivia contest. I asked you, as of late April 2017, approximately how many confirmed exoplanets have been discovered? How'd we do?
Very nice response. And a couple of numbers. It was really, most people went for the number apparently that comes from NASA, which is the one that that you were looking for. Am I right? Is it from NASA?
I am, but I was also, as why I said approximately, is I recognize different groups, different sites use different criteria to decide what's a confirmed exoplanet, what's a candidate. So I'm not surprised we've got variation, and that's okay, as long as it's kind of in the ballpark.
Well, this one is in the ballpark. The hit was made by Perry Metzger, a first-time winner, I think, out of New York, New York. The town's so nice, they named it twice, as our boss likes to say. He says 3,475 confirmed exoplanets. He says, of course, I'm posting this on April 21st. There may be a lot more by now. It's quite possible. Is that what you were looking for?
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. So in the 3,500 ballpark, amazing to me that there are that many planets we know in other star systems. By the way, a little extra info, there are 581 multi-planet systems that have more than one planet.
Wow, this has all happened in like the last 20 years.
Yeah, amazing.
I love this response from Vicky Knorr, or Knorr. She says, if we add all the estimated masses of all those exoplanets discovered so far, we've discovered, get this, 9 times 10 to the 29th kilograms of exoplanets. That's 150,000 Earths worth of stuff. You know, it's cheaper by the kilogram.
It is. You get those bundle discounts.
I didn't mention that the prizes going to our winner, Perry Metzger, include Dante Loretta's new game. This is the second board game to come from Dante, the PI for the OSIRIS-REx mission. It's Constellations. His Kickstarter campaign is over. They raised like almost 3 times what their goal was in that campaign. People can still pre-order the game, though. They can pre-order Constellations at squareup.com, and we'll put a link to that out as well. It looks like a very cool way to learn your way around the sky. A March for Science pin, which I neglected to say a couple of weeks ago, is from the people at pincause.com. This is the official March for Science pin from about, a week and a half ago as we speak. So we thank Kate and Nate at pincause.com for that. Of course, a Planetary Radio t-shirt and a 200-point iTelescope.net astronomy account. This from Perry. Sadly, rather than silicaceous, carbonaceous, and metallic, are the rubber asteroids, which have not been observed by science in quite a while. Will they ever be seen again? Only the Planetary Society knows for sure. We're ready for next time.
Speaking of things on Mars, what are the names of the two astrobots on the surface of Mars? These are Lego minifigure representations put there by the Planetary Society. The two astrobots, what are their names? If you listen to the show back in the archives, way back, they even were interviewed by Matt.
They sure were. If you can figure it out, if you find the names of the astrobots that are accompanied by those Lego blocks Bruce was talking about, you can get us an answer by Wednesday, May 10th at 8 a.m. Pacific time, and you'll be in the contest to win yourself a Planetary Radio t-shirt, an iTelescope.net account from the good folks at iTelescope, that worldwide network of nonprofit telescopes.
I just want to mention, I forgot to say, go to planetary.org/radio contest to enter the contest.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think about plants that are not green. Thank you, and good night.
You mean like the rust-colored ones that are all the on all the plains of Mars we just haven't seen yet?
They blend in. They're so clever with their camouflage.
He's Bruce Betts, the Director of Science and Technology for the Planetary Society, and he joins us every week here for What's Up. I'll once again be at the Explore Mars Humans to Mars Summit at the George Washington University, Washington, D.C., May 9 through 11. It is going to be an amazing gathering. I hope to see some of you there. You can learn more about the conference at h2m.exploremars.org. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its never-eclipsed members. Daniel Gunn is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which was arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Matt Kaplan. Clear skies, please.